WNYC Studios is supported by the Public Theater, presenting the world premiere of Jordans, a new play by Ife Olujobi about two young black colleagues forced together and torn apart by their race, ambition, and otherworldly circumstances. Directed by Whitney White, begins April 11th. Learn more at publictheater.org.
There are levers of power and levers of money. And every time the powers that be in Washington, D.C. talk about a new bailout, the levers of money need to be pulled around the world. And some of the biggest levers are in China, which owns the lion's share of American debt, perhaps $2 trillion worth. And in charge of $200 billion of that debt is Gao Xiqing, a Chinese official, lawyer, trained in the United States, who's the subject of a profile by national correspondent for The Atlantic magazine, James Fallows, who spoke with Gao Xiqing about the recession and the power that China suddenly has over the U.S. economic future. James Fallows joins us now from Beijing. Thanks for being with us, James.
My pleasure.
First of all, how did you find Gao Xiqing?
I guess the real answer would be with some difficulty. It's been over the last year that I've been trying to arrange this interview with him because it is quite unusual for Chinese officials, especially of this prominence, to talk on the record with foreign journalists. So he certainly wasn't difficult to notice in China because he's such a prominent person, but it was a long matter of sort of establishing trust that I'd be able to convey his words and he wouldn't create problems either for China or himself or the U.S. by talking on the record.
And he's the president of the China Investment Corporation, which is you know, why he's so important. But being in charge of $200 billion of debt, what is it exactly that he can pull the lever of? I mean, what is it that he controls?
The main thing he does day by day in practical terms is make a lot of China's high visibility investments. For example, last year they took a big stake in Blackstone and lost a lot of money doing that. And that's been hugely controversial within China. People say, oh, my hard-earned RMB, you know, the Chinese money that I've saved from my job as a seamstress, you're now investing it with these New York bankers. And he has taken a similar position with Goldman Sachs. More broadly, when there are discretionary investments by the Chinese government with their surplus, not just buying the T-notes, but deciding where to put money into the stock exchange, where to try to take strategic positions in actual companies. This China Investment Corporation, of which he's the president, is the main actor.
And the investment corporation not only guarantees U.S. liquidity to fund all these infrastructure projects that are being talked about, including the financial bailout, he's got to answer to the zillions of Chinese savers, and they are a saving culture. And so he's getting it from both ends.
It's a really interesting bind that Mr. Gao is in. I think he's a particularly interesting figure, which is why I was so glad to be able to have him speak directly to English-speaking readers through this article. There's a generation of people like him. He's in his mid-50s who grew up in really hard times in China. He worked on a railroad gang during the Cultural Revolution. He was educated in the U.S. He practiced as a Wall Street lawyer. Now, coming back to China, he's familiar with U.S. culture, of course, familiar with Chinese culture, and trying to walk the tightrope of making positions in the U.S. and foreign markets without seeming too ominous or too much like a Chinese banking overlord when doing that, but also answering to Chinese savers and the Chinese politicians when there have been huge losses for this $200 billion portfolio, as there have been for all of us.
James, how would you describe his demeanor, and why do you think he allowed for an interview now?
His demeanor, I think that if more Chinese officials, number one, were like him, but number two, also expose themselves to the world public, I think there'd be a much different impression of China around the world. He comes across as a very jokey person. He looks like somebody from Silicon Valley. He's, as I say, he's 55, but he has a black crew cut. He wears Silicon Valley type CEO clothes, informal open neck shirts, and he's very direct and humorous. It's often the case when dealing with potentates in China or other Asian countries that you get this very stilted rhetoric, and it's hard to see the actual person beneath there. There's no barrier to the actual person of Gao Xiqing. As to why he did this, I've spent a long time trying to establish a relationship of trust with him, and I think he may have sensed that it was time for people like him who can address the thinking patterns and the concerns and the language of the U.S. public and the world public to do something when the rest of the government was doing so poorly in trying to communicate with the outside world.
Well, so many people, when they talk about the future of the financial bailout and this world financial crisis, claim that the big sort of five-alarm event will be when China begins to unwind its accounts in dollars and unwinds its U.S. investments, maybe diversifying out of the U.S. into some other sorts of investments. When that happens, the value of U.S. financial assets is apparently going to plummet. Do you have any evidence that, first of all, he's aware of that tightrope, and secondly, that they're inclined to use that weapon in some way?
Well, he certainly is 100% or 1 million percent aware right. of the situation. And in the short term, he recognizes that it's a kind of suicide pact in the short term. If China started a run on the U.S. dollar or run on U.S. equities, then this $2 trillion of money that China has largely in dollars, that would shrink a lot more dramatically than it has. So in the short term, there is a wedded at the hip situation of the U.S. and China in this regard. In the long term, it's clear that China knows that China and Mr. Gao and others are judging their options. On the one hand, it's important to them for manufacturing terms to keep having a big export market to the U.S., and so they want to maintain the relationship in that way. If they think the U.S. currency is headed for a long-term decline, then that would steer them away. And while I have to say this somewhat carefully, it's clear to me that many people of influence in the Chinese financial system were watching the U.S. election very carefully, and that if the other side had won, I think they would have taken that as a sort of sell American stocks signal that the U.S. would not have been able to deal with its financial situation.
Well, James Fallows, of course, Obama won. And why don't you listen to this economic proposition that you actually quote in the beginning of your article in The Atlantic?
Nothing's more important than us no longer borrowing $700 billion or more from China and sending it to Saudi Arabia.
Any chance, James Fallows, that that's likely to change anytime soon?
Well, the Saudi Arabian part, I'll leave to others to know that better. In terms of the borrowing from China part, it's likely that one effect of the collapse of demand that, as we all know, is going on in the U.S. right now, is the U.S. going to be buying less stuff from China. That's why there are being lots of layoffs in Chinese plants. And so the flow of money is being reduced in that gross sense for reasons that are not good for anybody because of the worldwide slowdown. I think the question in the longer term, you know, what Obama was talking about was sort of the hollowing out of the manufacturing base and just shipping it all off for energy supplies. And I think that it's in China's interest and the U.S. too to have a sustainable economic relationship where the U.S. where neither side feels victimized. So that's to be worked out.
Well, for the time being, we're on the hook. They're on the hook. James Fallows, thanks so much for joining us. National correspondent for The Atlantic magazine. His profile of Gao Xiching appears in the current issue. Thank you, James.
My pleasure.
We are always on here at The Takeaway. That was one fascinating interview. His thoughts are just priceless.
Yeah, McCain is the sell order.
The sell order.
I hadn't heard that anywhere.
But it didn't happen. Yeah. Anyhow, we're asking whether you care where your food and other products come from.
I hate buying apples from New Zealand in fall in New York, where we have lots of apples in season.
So tell us your take. Where are your clothes or your food or anything else that you buy? Where is it coming from? And do you care? 8778-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. And here's your takeaway.
The humble shipping container was more important for the growth of global economy and world trade than the microchip.
That's the BBC's Jeremy Hillman talking about the BBC container.
I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Adora Udoji. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.